I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10. The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who shows this?
Lakers Con is the next one here. I'd use the 2 picks for Kessler, set you up for the future. We've been trying to find a center for 4 years. Would you overpay if available? Well, for one thing, he's not available. I've spoken to people close to the Lakers on this one. I had the report a few weeks back on this. Nothing has changed here. Danny Ainge does not want to send Walker Kessler basically anywhere, but especially not to the Lakers. He is concerned that that Kessler and AD would anchor the front court in a way that would provide a too high of a floor for the Lakers teams moving forward, and that would therefore make the draft capital that they own from the Lakers that much less valuable. So Like, would I go all in and trade for Walker Kessler, trade two first rounders for Walker Kessler? Yeah, I probably would, but it's just not an option for the Lakers, no matter what they put on the table. As frustrating as that might be. Suck it, Danny Ainge. Actually, you know what? This is a good thing to play on the heels of talking about Danny Ainge. All right, the next one here comes from Justin Tindall, who writes, Dr. Buss was a was title every year under Jeannie. There's zero direction. She hires people that have no experience, would love OKC's GM, actual real basketball people. Well, here's what I'll say. My, like, pie-in-the-sky hope is that at the end of, if not this season, but certainly like as we get close to LeBron hanging them up, Jeannie gets approached by Guggenheim, and Guggenheim, who has a right of first refusal, if the Buss trust and the Buss family does elect to sell, Guggenheim has the first crack. At that offer. So my hope, especially given how things are going for the Dodgers, my hope here is that that Guggenheim approaches the Buss family or vice versa, and they come to some kind of agreement where the Buss family still owes a part of the Lakers moving forward. So I don't think they'll ever completely sell, but they sell enough to Guggenheim to basically switch spots on the organizational totem pole. And Guggenheim gets to clean house and go and hire all of the best people and run the Lakers in the same way that they run the Dodgers. I cannot say, I know you guys probably get sick of hearing me talk about how the Dodgers are run, but it's for a reason. The track record that Guggenheim has had with the Dodgers organization is pretty freaking insane. Has it led to the championships that maybe we would hope? No, but anybody who has watched any baseball, especially postseason baseball, would know playoffs in Major League Baseball are damn near random. But like you look at their track record and their, you know, like the number of games they win every year, they have won like insane numbers of games every year. It's like almost 100 win season. You could write it down and you could pencil them in for 100 win season every year. That is so effing hard to do in baseball, especially when you consider all of the injuries that the Dodgers have on their pitching staff. Seems like every year, they spend money like crazy. They have upgraded the facilities for fans there. I think they're supposed to get in and out at Dodger Stadium potentially this next season. Like they get it. They understand how to run a professional sports organization, and specifically in LA. And my hope here is for Jeannie and the rest of the Buss siblings to basically switch spots to where they own, you know, a minority share of the Lakers, and Guggenheim then owns a majority share of the Lakers, and they basically tell Jeannie and those guys, here, look, just go and you could pile your money up because we're going to make a lot more money than you have as a lead decision maker of the Lakers. We're going to win more games. We're going to be more effective as an organization. Just go and enjoy the ride over there and let the professionals actually handle this stuff. And if that ever happens, that'll be probably the happiest you'll ever see me on a podcast. All right, let's go up to the, let's see. All right. Gavin Elowitz writes, Kolo Muani to Juventude. When are Tottenham going to sign someone? You know what, man? I hope tomorrow for your sake. I wish I could get more into like Premier League soccer or European soccer. I grew up a Barca fan. And then obviously, like, they have been kind of a disaster over the last few years or whatever. But I get so zeroed in on basketball. There's some overlap there between the seasons. And the hours are kind of wonky. You know, they play so early in the morning and I wind up being up as late as I normally am because of this gig that I don't get to pay as close attention to them. But I do miss it. I used to love playing FIFA. I used to love watching Barca. Like, Messi is one of my absolute favorite athletes across all of sports ever. Ronaldinho, like, I got to actually see him. Now, he wasn't playing with Barca at the time. He was playing for, I think, AC Milan, and he played a game in LA, and I got to go see Ronaldinho play a soccer game. That was, one of the cooler moments of my sports fandom. But for your sake, if you're a Tottenham fan, I hope they sign somebody while I've been talking. Let's go the next one here. All right, Lane R. I hate to say it, but they are probably going to use the LA Fires as an excuse for why this coaching is so bad. I didn't even own, obviously, the house when we were evacuated from it. It was a few years ago, and it was my parents' house. But now looking back on it, like, now that I own a house, if I was to lose this house and be faced with all of that stuff and have to deal with insurance and try to rebuild a house, and then let alone all of the momentum, the mementos that you lose, and maybe even potentially a pet in because of the way that the house burns or anything like that, like, I would be a wreck for a while. And trying to coach right away, like, that'd be really difficult. Some people can, some people do kind of dive into the work and distract themselves with work, but eventually, like, the distraction, kind of goes away, and you have to go back and sit in that reality all over again. So am I going to excuse the coaching? No, because I think the bigger explanation for it is that JJ is a rookie. But I am going to share some empathy for somebody going through that, because I can only imagine, even being as wealthy as JJ Redick is, having to explain to your kids who don't know necessarily how wealthy you are or why any of this stuff is happening, having to explain to your kids, hey, we have to, like, live in a hotel for a little while or in a rented house for a while we rebuild our house. That would be really tough. And, legitimately, to everybody going through that, whether you coach the Lakers or not, my heart absolutely breaks for everybody, no matter, like, the social class or whatever the background situation might be. I do really sincerely feel for everybody going through it. The next super comment here comes from Gorilla. In your Guggenheim scenario, would there be room for the Young Bus Bros? One thing that you could do as part of the negotiations there is say that, Joey and Jesse maintain some kind of a role in the organization moving forward. Joey and Jesse would be part of the negotiating group in that scenario there. And if it's a high enough priority to them to continue working with the Lakers, then that can be a item on the docket between them and Guggenheim in those conversations. So I don't know. I'm not as, like, attached to the Bus Brothers as I see with others. I'm frankly kind of over the Bus family. Jim was a disaster. Jeannie has been a disaster. I just am pretty over nepotism in general here in this regard. I would just like to, if Guggenheim does all of their research, all of their own independent research, and they come to the conclusion that Joey and Jesse Buss are good enough at what they do to be kept on, cool, awesome, fantastic. Let's move forward. But, like, just keeping them on, you know, for the sake of keeping them on, or because they are like the only bus siblings that anybody has any kind of positive feeling towards. I don't know. I could take them or leave them. Let's go here. Scrolling up to the top again. This is going to be tough. I got to pick up the pace a little bit. JK Lobos writes, hey, Anthony, do you think the front office believes in the AD and LeBron duo? I actually wrote a few years back that I didn't think, like, they have shown us pretty definitively through their actions that they don't. And until they actually go all in with those two guys, not just the one first round pick, but both of them, and you know, really goes for it this season, I think we can, if they don't, like, let alone if they don't move one of the first rounders that they can this year, then, you know, the lesson, the moral of the story here is that they are just writing this out, and that it is, you know, the most cynical version of how the season could have gone. If they move one of the first rounders, I would still be a little tweaked, you know, but that would make me feel a little bit better. But I don't necessarily think, not just based on their actions to this point, but also based on the way that, you know, people close to the Lakers kind of talk about it. It is kind of this like unfortunate reality that they're like, yeah, we probably missed our opportunity being too conservative while LeBron would, you know, when it's like age 38 season or a couple of years with AD too. They waited and they waited and they waited, and they have now waited long enough to where they can more viably make the argument that AD and LeBron aren't good enough on a night by night basis to believe in as a championship caliber duo. Sad as hell, but you know, might just be the situation. Let's go. Festo writes, JJ is not a good coach. The Lakers are going down with the LeBron ship. I think it's more so that LeBron is going down with the Lakers ship. But look, like, as far as, like, you know, the reality of the situation, I also understand fans who are like, well, hold on. They hired his co-host, his podcast co-host, and they drafted his son, and, you know, like, they keep on giving these clutch favors out. Like, LeBron is not necessarily innocent in this stuff either, right? Obviously pushed hard for the Russell Westbrook trade. Even though I've told you guys a zillion times that Rob was very pro Russell Westbrook. But there's always been this weird thing between Lakers fans and LeBron. I don't think there was ever a realistic scenario here where Lakers fans fully wrap their arms around LeBron James. I grant that, like, you know, because he says here again, no one wants to work with him. He's arrogant as hell. Find anybody who is as good at LeBron is at anything, and there's not too much humility there. Like, it's really, really rare that somebody is the best in the world at what they do and is like, oh, stop it. You know, like, normally, though, like, the best coder, the best, you know, like, you could find it, you know, the best musicians, like, there's not normally a ton of humility when it comes to the best in the world at anything, let alone something as public as a professional athlete. So, yeah, do I think LeBron is arrogant? 100%. But some of it is, I think, earned arrogance by how good he is. And I don't know. Like, I'm just never going to believe that the worst thing going on in the Lakers organization is LeBron. I think it's very, very clearly Jeannie and her brunch buddies. White on Delect. Any truth to the LeBron Diddy rumors? I don't know. I'm not going to say one way or the other. I'm probably going to lean no, but like, when it comes to those circles and stuff like that, nothing would particularly shock me. Lanar, Anthony, is Anthony live or is this pre-taped? You guys are leaving me these comments live. Like I'm, I mean, I'm responding to your questions live. Daniel Berry Sports Highlights. Yo, what up, Daniel? Always great to have you here. Lanar, there are no tradable contracts. Justin Tindall, more failures by Pelinka. It does hurt that the Lakers only had one expiring contract to move this year in D'Angelo Russell. And like even if it would have costed having guys on more per year, I would have tried to, you know, with this new CBA coming up, I would have tried a lot harder than it appears the Lakers did to have more expiring money at their disposal right now. Mark Cousy writes, Lakers just traded for Dorian Finney-Smith, who was the ninth best player on a team that's in the bottom feeder division. Expecting vast improvement is more than highly unlikely. Yeah, I think there's some truth there. Like, I think people got a little bit too excited about Dorian. I would like to see the impact Dorian has on the starting lineup whenever he gets into it before I make grand statements like this one. But at the end of the day, like, you got the guy without moving a first-round pick. Inherently, that is going to tell you that guy isn't going to change the world around him. Let's go. Tony Wiley writes, the Lakers are in turmoil. The organization is going straight downhill with no breaks. SMH. I think there's like breaks. They just squeak really hard. Like the breaks aren't exactly working. You probably have to pull the e-brake at some point, which obviously leads to spinning out and stuff like that too. But I do think there are things that the Lakers can do, i.e. selling to Guggenheim, that would allow us to not have to be watching like the Knicks West after LeBron leaves. JK Lobos writes, do you think the front office believes any of the trade targets, Jonas, Brogdon, Vooch, Brown, will put them at the OKC Celtics level? None of those guys that you mentioned do. I don't think they believe that either. I do kind of wonder if, like, if you really swing for the fences and you bring in like a Brandon Ingram, if that is like the only path that you can take to get to those teams' levels. I know the Lakers are reluctant to do that because of the cost, and then, you know, New Orleans being reluctant to send them Brandon Ingram. Not to mention, after this season, needing to turn around and pay Ingram right away is something that gives the Lakers and every other team pause. But I think if the Lakers are still hovering in like that 3-4-5 range or 4-5 range in the West at the end of the deadline, as we approach the deadline, there's a 10% chance that they make that kind of a move and do whatever they have to do to go out and get like Brandon Ingram. And I don't think it would require you to move like Austin or Dalton in the ways that the Lakers don't want to. But like if it's Rui and Gabe and, you know, whatever expiring contracts beyond that, plus the two first or whatever, or a first, I could see the Lakers doing that if New Orleans takes those negotiations seriously. One thing that to keep in mind in that New Orleans scenario is that David Griffin and Rob Pelinka were able to put aside all of that nonsense from the year prior when Magic and Dell Demps completely screwed up. Well, more so Magic, but when Magic and Dell Demps got to a point where they like couldn't work together anymore, both guys, you know, in Magic's case, he walked away. Dell Demps, I believe, was fired. You know, David Griffin, Rob Pelinka, they like were able to sit back down at the negotiating table and hammer out a deal, and also a fair deal for New Orleans. And I think in this scenario, that would maybe help the Lakers' chances at getting Ingram if that's somebody that you really, really want. Mark Cousy, JJ was a LeBron clutch hire to keep him happy in signing little LeBron. It's starting to be painful. Yep, made those points a second ago. Todd Welch, Does the front office have any remorse over not picking any Kenny Atkinson, who is killing it in Cleveland? I don't think this front office is honestly all that capable of remorse. The sense that I get as far as like how the Lakers operate is they skip over remorse and they go right to like, how can I protect my job or how can I benefit from a mistake that somebody else made elsewhere in the organization? It's not a very healthy culture. It's not a very healthy way to run things, but I think that's kind of the reality of it. Mark Cousy, Kenny is a great coach who was tossed out by KD and Flat Earth. Yeah, I would, it's probably worth mentioning that Brooklyn probably regrets that, you know, almost as much as anybody regrets anything over the last few years. Lane R, no, Anthony, we need to be objective about JJ. He was not a good coach even before the fires. Stop it. I said he was a rookie. Like, I didn't say he was good. I think he was probably fine for like on a rookie standard or grading scale, but like rookie head coaches tend to struggle coming out of the gates. Rookie coaches, remember, JJ had zero coaching experience before the season. Like, those guys there's a giant learning curve there, and I think we're watching that learning curve take place. I promise you, I am not sitting here saying that like JJ is the second coming of Pat Riley. Those were things that the Lakers were leaking. I never believed any of them. Chris Navarro, I keep saying it again. JJ can coach up a schematic, but he can't make the ball go in the hoop. That's the other part of it, you know, like Dalton Knecht forgot how to shoot midway through the season. LeBron went through a bit of a slump. Rui recently just isn't interested in shooting, hasn't been able to get shots off. Even D'Angelo Russell, while he was a Laker, took a giant step back this year as a shooter. Like, some of that, I think, is due to poor design. Some of it, I think, is has a lot to do with like the players themselves and the culture and stuff like that organizationally. But yeah, some of it also is just like guys miss it, and it's hard to hold the coach accountable all the time for guys just missing sometimes. Let's see. Lane, also, I love you. I love you too, Lane. Revived. Anthony, do you think the Lakers need a fourth best level player? So in this case, you have a player worse than Austin. I think they need a player better than Austin to be considered a contender this year. I like Austin. Great story. Incredible contract, all of that stuff. But I think they need a player who allows him to shift down a little bit in terms of responsibilities. Alicia Clark Jones, thanks, Anthony, for your straightforward takes. You and Jovan are my favorites. Do you think LeBron retires next year? Sorry, my nose is itchy. One, I appreciate it, Alicia. Thank you very much. Jovan's the best, my dude, my colleague at Odyssey. We have some cool stuff on that front, hopefully coming soon. But do I think LeBron retires next year? Yes. Yeah, I do. I don't think he retires this year. I don't think he walks away without some grand, like, you know, documentary and big farewell tour and all of that stuff. But I do think, like, this is the first year that the decline is kind of evident. And if we see it, I think he sees it. He's the smartest basketball mind of my lifetime. And I wouldn't bet on it. Because like if he plays beyond next year, I think there's a chance he could play with Bryce, depending on how things go for Bryce. And maybe he really, really wants to do that. But I don't know. I could kind of see it. And what happens to the Lakers after LeBron retires is going to be fascinating. All right, we have time for maybe a couple more here. We have Chris, the art director. Thank you, Anthony. I asked a question about Tim Harris and Rob on Lakers Nation, and they laughed at it. I'm not getting, you know, Lakers Nation has to be a lot more careful because of their relationships with the Lakers than I do. I don't have those same relationships with the Lakers. Rye Guy, AR, Rui, Gabe, and Jalen Huchefino without picks for LaVine, I do in a heartbeat. Not sure if the Bulls would even do that, but LA should if that's on the table. I get including, I don't think you should have to include AR for that deal. Now, mathematically, it's tough what the Lakers would have to do to, you know, actually take in LaVine's contract without sending out ARs. And that's why, like, when they traded D'Angelo Russell, any chance of trading for Zach LaVine went out the window. And I don't know. I don't think they took the LaVine option as seriously as I wish they did, because especially last year, like I did that show with Sean over the weekend. Really cool project that he did there, right? You know, 3 hours of streaming to try to raise funds for the people who are going through it with the fires. And I said this on that show, I'll say it again here. The Lakers, I think the Lakers missed a real opportunity last year when I do think they could have gotten stuff with Zach LaVine at the deadline. And I think the Bulls would have taken even D'Angelo Russell's contract, which at the time wasn't expiring. You know, I think they should have really considered it then. The issue with not trading AR for LaVine is that you run into some of the same issues that you had when D'Lo was, you know, next to Austin. So maybe that's why you include AR. If you include AR, you better get like a pick back. I think that contract is too good to send out for just like a really bad, albeit productive player in Zach LaVine, but a really bad contract. So I would say, like, if you are including AR, you probably got to get back like a good second rounder from Chicago. And I don't know how interested they would be in doing that, but that's what I would push hard for. Like, AR's contract, I'm not kidding, Austin Reeves' contract is one of the absolute best in the NBA, and you're trading it for one of the worst contracts in the NBA. Now, yeah, you're getting better, you're getting a better basketball player back, but you're trading three rotation players for him, and solving basically like one issue that the Lakers have. And I don't think he's a good enough player to do all of that stuff for. I would much rather call up New Orleans about Brandon Ingram. All right. I think that's going to, I got to see how many, I think I went through a good chunk of these. Let's see. Yeah, I think I got a lot of these. And I appreciate this went well. I'm happy with how this went. Maybe I'll do these on other days that we don't have as much to talk about. Thank you everybody for all of the questions, all the comments. Good questions. I appreciate you guys asking about the organization. And some of the people on top of it, at the top of it, as kind of how you arrive at the place where the Lakers have kind of arrived. So that was a good notes and a good conversation there. And yeah, we'll be right back at it. The Lakers play Wednesday night, I believe, again at home against the Miami Heat. Raj and I will be here in the lounge to talk after that game. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day, make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.